How you doing, wrestling fans? And welcome to another edition of John Arizzi's Pro Wrestling Spotlight Podcast. We are the only wrestling podcast that brings you back in time to feature vintage audio, special guests, and a whole lot more. We always feature some of the biggest names of that time. This show that we're taping today is not going to be an exception either. Pro Wrestling Spotlight covered all the news and the breaking developments that happened in real time. And now we get to relive those moments and that history right here on this podcast. Today, we're going to review show number 258 of the Pro Wrestling Spotlight, which originally aired this episode on 1240 AM WGBB in West Babylon, New York, on November the 27th, 1994. On this episode, we learn of the death of Art Barr and bring on Ron Scholar to discuss his untimely passing. And then ECW's Rocco Rock and Johnny Grunge, the Public Enemy, will be in the studio from all those years ago. And it's pure chaos with Los Gringos Locos, which was the tag team that Art Barr was in. So a lot to cover on this episode. I want to thank some of the new patrons that joined us this past week. Thank you so much for your support. So that was really cool that we picked up a few new members this week. The Patreon account, as I talk about each and every week, is so important to us. It helps cover the production costs for the show, and especially now that we are finalizing what we're going to do when this run is over, after five more shows to review after this one. So that Patreon support is going to allow us to keep going. So if you haven't become a member yet, $5 a month gets you in the door. You get the archives for that $5. You get the podcast early. You get the video podcast early. You get it commercial free. And then there's so much more content as well. We are posting new from 1974 vintage WWWF television promos and broadcast, and there's just all kinds of stuff going on Patreon, and I'm trying to finalize that way where I could put up there some old vintage wrestling magazines and maybe some negatives from my archives that you could purchase directly from me right there on Patreon. The only way to get all that is to become a member. Patreon.com/John Arizzi. Check it out. And I know that you'll be satisfied with all the content that's up there right now. All the radio shows and everything else on that Patreon account. Let's bring Marsh on. Marsh, are you there?
Ayo.
Ayo. Donnie, are you there?
No. Yeah, are you there? I had so much fun this episode, just because we don't have a lot of clips of it, but almost every caller, you're like, you're next. Okay, cool. You're next. You're on right now. Yeah, great. You're on the air. Oh, hey, John. Like, yeah. So many of them had no idea what you meant when you said you're up.
Yeah, this was kind of an interesting show. As we, obviously start the show off with the untimely death of one of the members of Los Gringos Locos, Art Barr. So we'll get into all of that. And then Public Enemy, just chaos in the studio. And as I was telling you before we started taping, years ago when I did the show with them, I wasn't really happy that they were, in character. I'd rather them be serious and talk. But they came in just rip-roaring and went right into their gimmick, and now that I listened back to it and we're going to review it today, I'm really happy that they did their, did their characters. They were really, really good.
And you were having fun. You were laughing. And yeah. You were having a good time. So it's like you probably were walking out of it thinking, well, it's not what I had hoped for, but it wasn't a bad day,
Yeah. 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 So I'm overall happy with it, of course. And before we get started with it, I do have to last week we spoke about that movie Poor Things.
Yeah.
With Emma Stone. And at the Golden Globes, it won Best Picture in the comedy / musical category. And Emma Stone also won for Best Actress. So I was very happy to see that.
I thought that was cool when I saw that. I was
like, you got to check that movie out. Take Michelle. Go see it. hide her eyes during the gory parts, or but I think you really dig it. So anyway,
all right.
So we were supposed to have a Patreon executive producer, Joseph Holloway, with us on this episode, and because of the bad weather that is heading towards where he is and in a lot of parts of the country, he had a special meeting because he's you know, one of the supervisors of the school district there. So he'll join us next week, but we have a good one today, Marsh.
Yeah, this one's cool. Before we get into Public Enemy getting in to the show, because I mean, we start with Donnie's capsule. We have two clips about Art Bar, and then you get into Public Enemy. Just because you had mentioned it, you had spent a good amount of time with them backstage at ECW shows, right?
Yes.
So you got to see them out of character quite a bit, I imagine. They weren't super in character backstage, were they?
No, but, you know, also I had them on my tour in Southeast Asia.
A great point. You brought that up in here as well.
Yeah, that's where Paul put them together as a tag team. That's when he had that idea. And I actually rented my wrestling ring for the Southeast Asia tour from Ted Petty, who was Rocco Rock. So it was Teddy's ring that I used.
Wow. Yeah, you do have them tell a story about why they were out there. But yeah, so I guess you got to know them pretty well out of character. So when they came in this character, it must have been felt a certain way, I guess.
It did. And Teddy, of course, was a friend. I mean, I had him over my where I was staying, barbecue Johnny, Mike Dorham was his real name. Got to know him really well and watched his career just grow and grow and flourish. And I still can't believe that both of them are no longer with us.
Yeah, it's insane.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll ask you more about them as we get going. But to open up, we got Donnie Liable. It's just the capsule.
Well, since there's so much to get to, let's start right off with the capsule.
Okay,
Don. As John said, tragedy once again has taken the wrestling game by surprise with the sudden taking of Art Barr, one of its true superstars and leaders of the future. Barr was found dead in his car on Thursday, and no cause of death has been officially given, pending the results of an autopsy. Barr first claimed national attention in 1989 when leaving his home territory, Portland, Oregon, to assume the role of Beetlejuice for the National Wrestling Alliance. His tenure, however spectacular, was abbreviated due to the company releasing him amidst pressure from outside sources regarding past legal battles involving sex charges. Art, the son of longtime referee and promoter Sandy Barr in Portland, won his first pro title, the Pacific Northwest TV title, in 1987, and three times the region's tag straps came his way. With his brother Jesse Barr on January 19, 1992, over the Bruce Brothers, and on June 26, 1990, when he and partner Big Juice Warner, when they were billed as the Juice Patrol. Also on March 31, 1990, Art and Warner won the finals of the then-vacant tag title tournament from the Grappler and Brian Adams. Most recently, 3 weeks ago, on November 6th in Los Angeles, on the AAA Pay Show, working as heel American Love Machine, where he had been receiving high praise for his in-ring antics, he and partner Eddie Guerrero lost to El Hijo del Santo and Octagon, that cost him the hair. A father, a son, and an outstanding athletic talent, wrestling and loved ones weren't ready to lose Art Barr, dead at 26. We're getting to the in-ring news. As John alluded to earlier, there's been several vacancies of the WWF titles. Yesterday in Madison Square Garden, in a record 8 seconds, as they're calling it, Diesel pinned Bob Backlund, who was supposed to wrestle Bret Hart, and Diesel has the belt now. Also, this past Wednesday at Survivor Series, Bob Backlund, who first won the World Wrestling Federation heavyweight title on February the 20th, 1978, from superstar Billy Graham, once again laid claim to the belt. Now, this past Wednesday evening at the main event on the Federation's 8th annual Survivor Series pay show in San Antonio, Texas, Backlund won by submission as Owen Hart, Bret's younger brother in his challenger's corner, apparently tricked his mother, who was seated at ringside, to throw in the towel originally held by Davey Boy Smith, now stay with me on this, who was knocked out cold after hitting head first into the metal ring steps while in pursuit of Owen. Now, the one-half-hour-plus match concluded as Backlund had Bret locked and his front face cross, I should say his front face chicken wing hole for several minutes. Well, complete with a 60-piece marching band leading the parade of more than five dozen wrestlers representing more than 11 countries, more than 42,000 fans filled Tokyo, Japan's Egg Dome for last Sunday's All Japan Women's Wrestling Interpromotional card. The 22-match lineup lasted 10 hours, generating a $4 million gate, which is expected to increase before all revenues are completely tallied. Now, the 21st match on the Big Egg Wrestling Universe bill saw Alundra Blaze lose her WWF Women's Championship to Bull Nakano in just under 10 minutes. World Championship Wrestling's arena woes continue to mount as they cancel this past Thursday's Omnicard due to a lack of strong advance at the box office. The traditional Thanksgiving booking in WCW's hub did not have Hulk Hogan appearing on the lineup. Dusty Rhodes, however, was scheduled to be in the main event. Also in promotional transactions, one of the sport's classiest athletes, Ricky Steamboat, was officially dropped from the talent roster. In nursing an injured back, which has been keeping him out of the ring indefinitely, with Ricky's contract scheduled to expire at year's end, a decision was made not to renew it. All Japan Pro Wrestling standout tag duo, the Can-Am Connection, that's Dan Crowfoot and Doug Furness, are said to be talking about joining the WWF, as well as Japanese great Kensuke. Help me out on this one, Shinzaki. Most recently, Shinzaki has been working for Michinoku Pro Wrestling. It's a small independent group in Japan. Staying with news in the Orient, Cactus Jack is set to make his IWA debut in Tokyo on January 2nd in what else and against who else? A death match with Terry Funk. Also in UWFI action, the winner of this Wednesday night's match between Takada and Gary Albright will challenge Vader for their version of the world title on January the 16th in Tokyo's Budokan Hall. Also in Mexico, Perro Aguayo is the new IWC heavyweight champion, having defeated Conan in Juarez. Finally, this week in wrestling history, it was in 1983. This week, 11 years ago, Jimmy Valiant, competing under the identity of Charlie Brown, won his third Mid-Atlantic title in beating the Great Kabuki. And on this day, November 27th, 1991, only 3 years ago, on a Survivor Series held in Detroit, Michigan, The Undertaker won the WWF title from Hulk Hogan, thanks in part to interference by Ric Flair. For the Pro Wrestling Spotlight, I'm Don Liable reporting. Capsule time, 119.
Another great bang-up job by Donnie, talking about everything that was going on in the crazy world of wrestling.
Yeah, you guys talked about it, the WWF title switching hands to Backlund. I totally forgot about that was the Backlund match that Owen threw the towel in.
Yeah.
I remember being so mad as a kid. So mad.
Did you put your foot through the TV?
No. But that was really good. Blaze losing their title to Nakano. There's a bunch here that I totally forgot had happened. Like,
yeah.
Because I don't think Nakano was ever officially signed with WWF.
Yeah. Not to my recollection. No.
Yeah. So I wonder how that all went down and came about backstage wise, just because they don't typically put the title on someone they don't have under contract.
True. Maybe you could ask Deborah about that.
Yeah, I probably will. I'm going to see if it's something she's aware of or knows or remembers. But yeah, she lost the title there. And then I'm sure she gets it back at the next go. But you also, after the capsule, talked about the Godwins are coming in as hillbillies.
Look, that's all we need.
That's what you said. You're like, WWF's getting more another hillbilly. And you're like, oh, great.
I've never really liked those hillbilly gimmicks. Never did. Yeah. Hillbilly Jim was he was interesting. And then they had brought on the other members and they had that wedding, and it was just nonsense.
Yeah. And I always thought, just because maybe just be where I grew up, I always thought hillbilly was a weird term to begin with.
Yeah. Why do you say that?
Yeah. I mean, do you hear it all?
Are you a communist?
Yeah. It's weird. I just wonder how many people will refer to themselves or as each other as hillbillies.
Yeah.
But I'm sure it happens. But the big stuff, Art Barr found dead in his car.
Yeah.
In
his car. And the, you know, reports said he was also in his home lying on the floor with his daughter. And it's still been a lot of controversy surrounding that death. Some people said it was an aneurysm. And then it was reported that it was a drug overdose, heart attack based on drugs. And it never has really been officially confirmed what that cause of death was to this day. And he had his issues. I mean, when he got fired from WCW, that was in regard to him pleading guilty to a rape of a 19-year-old in Oregon. And and they were pushing his character on WCW as Beetlejuice to market to kids. So that was the end of that. But he kind of made a resurgence, especially when he went to AAA and teamed with Eddie Guerrero and Los Gringos Locos. And after he passed away, that's when Eddie started using the Frog Splash, which was Art's move.
What was Eddie using before that? Do you remember?
I don't remember.
Okay. But it is interesting to note that that's where he got the Frog Splash from. It was Art Barr's finisher, and so he took it as a homage. Yeah.
And he excelled in it, and, you know, it was a tribute, and it's carried on to this day. Now he's being given tributes because that's Rey Mysterio and even Dominic Mysterio. I mean, people use it.
Yeah.
And always point to this guy for Eddie. And of course, Art was the guy that Eddie got it from. So interesting stuff. And, you know, his career was a roller coaster. And he had a couple of really good years. But demons in this business back then, we lost so many in the business based on those demons that these guys had back then.
Yeah, I mean, especially if they never really came out and said what was the cause, but the aneurysm was going around at the time.
Yeah. So
did you get to work with him much or know him at all?
I knew him, just acquaintance, like, not really close. You know, I respect him, especially after that AAA show in August of 93, getting to meet him there. And then had him on the phone couple of times, but, you know, he didn't do the show, but nothing really close. And no, I never booked him on any of the shows that I did.
Okay.
AAA, when I was affiliated with them.
Was it just happenstance, or was it because of his history that you just were unsure of? Because you were pretty aware of stuff at the time.
Yeah. No, it was, you know, obviously when he got fired from WCW because of that controversy, and then he winds up going to Mexico. So it wasn't anything like a prejudice against him or anything. I just didn't know the dude, and he didn't really have marquee value here because he, you know, obviously was marginally successful as Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
And then later on, the Juicer, he called himself on the independent scene, but never had that opportunity, and it wasn't high on my priority list.
Yeah. What a funny...
I was more interested in working with Jake.
Yeah.
Because that was always a pleasure.
You guys are just so close.
Yeah.
It is kind of funny, though. He called himself the Juicer on the indie scene, hot off the steroid trials.
I know. The Juicer. That was another crazy name for sure. I mean, so he... Yeah. The Juicer.
Well, you get Ron Scholar on the phone and talk to him specifically about Art Barr, because he had grown close to Art.
He had, yes.
So this is him talking about Art. This is about half of the interview. The full interview is on the Patreon feed. Mm-hmm. It was about 10 minutes long. I only pulled about 4.5 minutes of it, just because, you know, for time's sake. But this opening sequence, I felt really, for guys like me who just feel like we haven't heard a lot about Art Barr over the years. History has not been super kind to him. Not that it's been bad to him, but it hasn't. His name doesn't come up as much as when you hear these stories, you kind of think that you expect it will, you know? So I thought this was a really cool way that he broke down who Art was in that moment.
Yeah, I agree. And it was good to have Ron's, Ron on the show, especially after this happened.
So without further ado, I guess, big story this week, perhaps the biggest, one of the biggest wrestling stories of the year, is the tragic death of Art Barr, Love Machine. And we are attempting now to get Ron Scholar on the line with us. Ron is the president of International Wrestling Council, was indeed a very close friend of Art Barr's. Got to know him real well over the past year and a half since International Wrestling Council formed in 1993, and has done business with Art a number of different times. Is Ron on the line yet, Mark? Okay, let's bring Ron on. Ron?
Yes.
How you doing?
Not too good. Not with what happened this week.
Yeah, it's been a very tragic week in pro wrestling, and of course, one of the major players in the AAA, and someone that I feel was ready to break through in a big way here in the United States. His time had come for stardom, I believe, here in the States, and that was Art Barr, American Love Machine, tragically died the other day. And Ron, can you fill the listeners in on as much as we know at this point regarding the tragic loss of Art Barr?
Well, I mean, I don't have the results of the autopsy, so I can't comment on that. Most people seem to believe it's a brain aneurysm, and that, you know, is certainly in keeping with the way he died. We'll find that out shortly. But the thing is that, you know, this was a tremendous loss on a personal level, because Art Barr was not just a great wrestler, but he was somebody that I became very friendly with. We used to talk 3-4 times a week. He was a really genuinely nice guy who worked very hard at his craft, who cared about his family, who was getting his life together. I mean, it's unspeakably tragic. I mean, the guy was only about 27 years old. He had just gone through a divorce. He was about to remarry. He had a beautiful young fiance who was pregnant at the time that he died with his next child. He had a 5-year-old son named Dexter who was laying next to him as he died. You know, he had a daughter from a previous marriage. It was just a terrible thing when his mother, you know, came to the house after not being able to get him on the phone and woke his little boy Dexter to let him in, and, you know, there he was dead. It was just awful, especially for, you know, for his fiance, you know, who's pregnant, you know, with the child that he'll never see.
Yeah, and certainly Art Barr's teammate Eddie Guerrero, and also the other associate in the Gringos Locos, Conan. How was the reaction? What are the wrestlers? If you have any way to,
yeah, of course. I mean, it was very upset. Conan called me up Wednesday night, the night that it happened. It was actually Wednesday afternoon. Conan called me. He was about 3:30 in the morning, and he was, you know, very, very upset. And you know, I mean, this is not the wrestling side. This is the personal side.
Yeah.
And they were very good friends. And Conan expressed to me that, you know, he had very few friends there because he's an American and he's living in Mexico. And, you know, there are certain cultural differences and all this. But Art Barr and Eddie Guerrero were like, you know, brothers to him. Even when he was a baby face and they were heels, you know, they were still, you know, friends, you know, on a personal level. And, you know, he was just felt terrible about it. I mean, he was a guy that not only was getting his life together, you know, on the personal side with his family, you know, having found, you know, the right girl and, you know, with a new baby on the way and all this. But wrestling-wise, he was a superstar in Mexico. He was the top rudo or top heel, not only in AAA, but in all of Mexico. He was well-respected in Japan. He was about to break through in the United States. We always had bigger crowds when he was on the card. He stole the pay-per-view, as far as I'm concerned. He stole the show. And he was poised for a breakthrough in the United States, no doubt about it. Plus, he had renegotiated his contract with AAA, and he was one of the highest-paid wrestlers in the world.
He was making a real good living there.
Absolutely. He was getting paid on a par with Bret Hart or Undertaker or, you know, any of those guys.
Yeah, fascinating stuff. And just a clarification, he wrestled as the Juicer in WCW because he started the Beetlejuice gimmick in Portland, and that was based on a suggestion by Rowdy Roddy Piper, who was working the territory. And Piper was one of the guys who trained Art Barr, along with Matt Osborne, Doink, the clown, and his dad, Sandy, and his brother Jesse were instrumental in that territory. Jim Herd thought he would be a good character to market to the kids, and that's how he brought him in 1990. So, but the guy's demons followed him. He was arrested for cocaine possession, It's just a roller coaster, tragic career, especially after he was gaining so much momentum. And there was even some interest from WWF to bring him and Eddie in as a tag team when they were that hot. So, yeah, sad to hear it and hearing Ron discuss his relationship with him and how Art was turning his life around and then the tragedy happens. So just a sad, sad story.
Yeah, and a really interesting to hear that he was getting paid so high that mm-hmm. at the time he was in AAA, he was still getting paid like top guy WWF, WCW money. Like, that's pretty cool because that's not the kind of thing you hear a lot, you know?
No, and he, you know, when Conan brought him in to Lucha, even before AAA was formed, I mean, Conan had brought him in and he was really... it was a very successful Rudo, you know. And then when Conan and Antonio Pena, when they formed AAA, they, you know, he was part and parcel of that, teaming with Eddie, and then it just took off. Yeah. So, yeah. So, I think there's a tape. I'm going to look for it. I think I have a copy of the interview that he did with Eric Evan Ginsberg on that WBAI, whatever that show was that they
yeah.
did.
If you have, you should. We do have the clip of Evan talking about Art Barr, and he does mention that he's got a full interview that's going to play like in a couple days, so I wouldn't be surprised if you tracked it down and recorded it.
Yeah, if I think I do have it. I'll have to look in the box of interview tapes that I have, and if I do, I'll put it up for patrons.
That'd be great. I do know. Wasn't his music Jump?
Don't recall.
Yeah, I talked to Roy Lucifer, friend of the show, mm-hmm. briefly about Art Barr because, you know, listening to this, you guys are talking so highly of him, and I just hadn't heard much about him. And I was like, well, if anybody's going to know about him, it's going to be Roy if that guy was killing it in AAA. And he said he gets choked up to this day when he hears the song Jump because of Art.
Okay.
He said that, you know, like you had mentioned that Eddie took from Art as much as he could, that people don't realize or remember that Art Barr was the charisma in that tag team, that everyone thought of him as like the guy and then Eddie was the worker.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
And you just think about the legacy that Eddie became, and no one talks about his wrestling much, right? They talk about what an amazing performer he was and how charismatic he was and how the whole crowd just wanted him, you know? And to think that when he started with this team, that was not how he was perceived. It was just really interesting to hear. And so I do think it'd be cool to dig in a little bit deeper and listen to that interview if you have it, because this was neat.
And we have Eddie Guerrero coming on the show. That's in one of the second to last show. That's the January 8th, 1995, show number 262, which we'll be getting to in a few weeks. So interesting stuff in that dynamic between the two. They had chemistry and they were over. They were over big time, big time.
Yeah. Let's listen to this last clip about Art. I mean, I do think you bring up Art with Public Enemy briefly, and I don't remember if we kept it or not because they didn't seem to know him very well.
No.
They did speculate that he was supposed to come into ECW and have a match with them.
Yeah, I think Paulie was wanting to bring him in.
Yeah. But that obviously never happened. But this is Evan Ginsberg from Wrestling Then and Now.
Okay.
Coming on to talk a little bit about Art.
So what we'll do right now is Evan Ginsberg there. We'll get Evan on the line. Evan is the editor and publisher of Wrestling Then and Now. It's a top nostalgia newsletter here in the wrestling business. Evan, are you there?
Hey, John. How you doing?
How are you doing today?
Okay. I just wanted to tell you, listeners, it's very ironic, but we have a weekly radio spot here in New York also on WBAI FM 99.5, and the show's called Light Show, and our last major interview was with Art Barr. So we took this very hard. Eddie Goldman and myself had done the interview, and Eddie had just spoken to him Tuesday night, and he died on Wednesday, so we were shocked.
Yeah, it was certainly a big blow to everybody, and just the fact, Evan, and I'm sure you got to agree, that here's a guy that that was probably one of the top heels in the wrestling business, certainly one of the top tag teams, if not the number one tag team in the entire business, although fans here in the United States were not that familiar with him until the last pay-per-view.
I think you hit the nail on the head. He was the next superstar. It was like the equivalent of Roddy Piper right before he broke. He was about to break huge, and it's a shame. And what can you say? It's a tragic loss, and the program we're on is actually an arts program, and I tried to compare it to the non-wrestling fans. I compared his loss to a Bruce Lee or a James Dean right before they hit international superstardom. It was just a tragic loss.
Yeah, that's certainly a good analogy there. Were you on the air this past Friday night with the news?
Yes, we were. Mm-hmm. We were. And again, what can you say? He came on, he did about an hour with us live on October 29th, and just very well-spoken, intelligent, a true wrestling scholar. He studied his tapes, and he even addressed some of the criticisms of Lucha. Lou Thesz had said a few critical things about the style, and he said, hey, I could wrestle any style whatsoever, and he proved it. He was in Japan, he was in the U.S., he was in Mexico, every style imaginable, just a great athlete. Yeah. Tragic loss.
Yes, indeed. And in your newsletter, Wrestling Then and Now, you've at some time featured interviews with some of the greats of the wrestling business. And I'm sure that that last interview you conducted with Art Barr certainly would be something that the fans out there would like to take a look at and read.
We're definitely going to run it. And we're also going to replay part of it this Friday night at 3 a.m. on 99.5 FM if anybody would like to hear the actual interview.
Yeah, that's certainly something that I'm sure a lot of fans would like to hear. Because Art was a pretty articulate guy, and he was a very smart individual, and he was someone who, as you said, was a real student of the game. You know, unfortunately, he had some legal problems in the past, and was fired, I guess, from WCW because of some of those problems when he wrestled there as Beetlejuice. And even back then, you know, when he wrestled as Beetlejuice, he certainly had great potential. At that time, and I guess he really his character and it really evolved to the point in the AAA where he was one of the best. And I hate to keep harping on that, but that's just something that you can't get out of your head, and it's a tragic loss.
Yep, it certainly was. And Evan Ginsberg, he was a consulting producer for the movie The Wrestler years ago. Yeah. And he also was one of the producers of a really fabulous documentary. I don't know if you've seen it, Marsh, but it was called 350 Days.
I have that on my list. I was looking at that the other day.
Yeah, he was one of the producers, one of the main producers for that. And it's a fabulous look at real life wrestling. And I would recommend it to anyone. But I know it's on Amazon Prime, if you have Amazon Prime, and it's out there. Easily accessible if you wanted to see it. So I highly recommend that you check that out. And Evan did a great job with that show.
Yeah, I want to see it. But this sounded cool. One of the things he brought up, and that was kind of one of the reasons why I started digging in, is he talked about the passing of him being akin to James Dean and such. Like the people who were just on the cusp of becoming something big. And so I feel like that, I mean, you never know, right? But that's what struck me. You guys were talking about him like he was going to be this icon, you know, mm-hmm. the kind of people would always talk about and have pictures of. And, oh, yeah, that Art Barr, what could have been, you know, but history just did not do that for him. And so it made me want to dig in and find out more about him, because I don't think you guys would just say that. You didn't just say that about anybody, you know?
No, he had it all. He really did. He had it all.
We'll see. Whatever I can find, I'll put up in the videos where I can. Okay. I did ask Roy for, you know, some photos or some maybe little videos we can put in there so people can kind of see him. But it was interesting to hear all this because I've heard the name and I didn't think much of it. And then hearing the way you guys talk about it makes me think I really should look him up, you know?
Yeah. He knew how to draw heat, boy. He certainly did.
I wonder if Sam Adonis pulls from him at all.
That's a good question.
Because when I was seeing what I did see about Art Barr, it reminded me of Adonis.
Yeah.
So
Yeah, that American Rudo, that American heel. And Sam does it very well with the, you know, he started it all with the coming into the ring with a Trump banner.
Yeah, when he first was doing that, and then he got away from that, but still was able to carry all the heat. Like,
yes,
he did really good. And I want to say there was somebody there called Gringo Loco. And I thought they'd created a team at some point, but just makes me wonder how much people are calling back that I don't realize that I missed, you know? But moving on a little bit, Public Enemy comes into the studio.
Yeah, live.
When you knew them outside of character, were the conversations you had with them like memorable or deep or?
Always more John, more Mike Dorum, Johnny Grunge than Teddy. Teddy was a little low key. Teddy was professional. Teddy was business. He liked to have fun and all, but Mike, Johnny, just in that overseas a tour that we did, I mean, he would never be around. He would never be in his room. He'd be at the casinos. He crashed a party for Imelda Marcos.
We'll get to that.
Yeah. So, I mean, he was the life of the party on the road. And he, you know, I paid those guys, I think I paid him $2,000 for a couple weeks. So it was a, you know, great deal. He worked hard. He was a great worker. He had great promos. He was one of the highlights of that Southeast Asia tour we did in 1993.
Go ahead.
And Teddy, you know, used like three different names on the tour. He was the Cheetah Kid, and he was Ted Petty, and then he also used Honest Mario Savoldi. Because I guess he didn't get along with Mario from ICW. Whatever. But yeah, memorable stuff.
Did they ever talk to you in a way that made you think of them as like particularly like brilliant to the wrestling business? Like, what kind of conversations were you hoping to get out of this?
No, I mean, this interview that we're about to play, or I was hoping that I would be able to dive deep into, you know, tearing the curtain down a little bit on how they got together and, you know, all of those little nuances and getting inside info on the development, but they were totally in character. And I kind of just went with that, you know, but I had a list of questions that were more insider than was kayfabe type questions.
Gotcha. Because it is pretty fascinating how they actually got teamed up was on your tour when Paul Heyman was like, these guys should be together.
Well, Paul did see something in them, and he was friends with Ted, and he saw Johnny, and he had that idea. He had that idea. You know, Paul's wheels were turning as he was, you know, on that tour with us, and it was more of a scouting trip, I think, for him than it was a payday. What's that?
How close was their voice to what we're going to hear? Because this sounded like a real life voice. Yeah.
Johnny was pretty spot on. Teddy was totally different.
So as soon as you heard him with the other voice, you went, okay.
Yep. There we go. Yeah. Because Teddy, especially, that was not Teddy in real life.
Okay, we're back here in the studios of WGBB in the Pro Wrestling Spotlight. Joining us here live today, one of the most exciting tag teams to ever perform in this business. A relatively young team. They've been tearing the house up at the ECW Arena and other selected arenas promoted by ECW over the last year or so. Talking about Rocco Rock and Johnny Grunge, the Public Enemy, is in the house here at Pro Wrestling Spotlight.
You got it, Johnny Rizzi, Public Enemy in the house.
So let me tell you something, Rocco. You and Johnny have been together for, well, we'll get Johnny here for just a second. I'm sure he's checking in with probably some of his
Johnny babes. Got business. You see, I take care of the entertainment, and Johnny, he takes care of the business.
Uh-huh. And there's a lot of business to be taken care of right now.
Lots of business lately for the Public Enemy, man. We're a hot commodity now, baby.
Yes, you are. And just the fact that you've also, you're held now two-time title holders for the ECW Tag Team titles.
Two-time ECW World Tag Team Champions. Yes, sir. Back again.
Yes, indeed. And when did you two hook up as a team? I know last year you guys got together and formed this tag team. You guys have been around and about for a while, and you guys got together last year and decided to put together this Public Enemy.
Well, it just seemed like a natural thing to do because we're both from the streets. We both, you know, we believe in the same principles and we have the same morals, and we're like brothers, John. You know, we're just like brothers, so it's only natural that it drifts in our everyday life over into the ring. So we were down and out for a while, and we got together, and ever since we got together, things have been going really good for us.
Yes, indeed, and here comes your tag team partner coming in to sit down after using the phones here at the station.
Don't break nothing now, home. I ain't gonna break nothing with them calling cards we got last night. They ain't no more good,
oh,
Rocco.
Jolly, why you gotta mess with that stuff now? We on the radio.
I don't understand. You can't even steal good credit cards no more. Nobody pays their bills.
Jesus. And I was looking for a new color TV too this week.
Saw one in the window, nobody beats the wind.
Yes, sir.
It's been it's gonna be an interesting segment here with you guys. Is your headset's okay? You have a volume control over there.
He got him on backwards because he put that thing on your right. God, Johnny, will you
don't touch me?
We're gonna be taking some calls for you guys later in the program, and Dave Meltzer will be joining us a little after 2 o'clock. And you familiar with Dave Meltzer at all, the Wrestling Observer newsletter?
Oh, Mr. Dave Meltzer. You know, is he familiar with, we're familiar with him, he's familiar with us.
He's the one who
gives us some 4.5 stars every match in ECW Arena.
Speaking of 4.5 stars, last show at ECW Arena, we had a bus trip there just a couple weeks ago. Actually, just a week ago, you guys tore the house down. You recaptured, you recaptured the title from Cactus and Mikey a few shows ago, right?
Well, it ain't nothing but a thing. It was just business, Johnny. Just doing our job.
Let's get one other thing straight. We tear the house down because we built that house there in the ECW. You're looking at the two that built the house. That's our house, that ECW Arena, baby.
The first one, the tag team titles, was it against the Funk Brothers? Is that give us the fans out there who are not familiar with your careers. A synopsis as far as when you first captured the title and
well, first of all, we captured the titles from the Tasmaniac and that undisciple sicko Kevin Sullivan, who I hate so much.
That Kevin Sullivan been a thorn in our side, John Arizzi, ever since we come to the ECW. But if you're going to beat him once,
you might as well beat him twice.
Yeah, Johnny. Hey, champ.
Hey, champ.
Funny. It's funny listening because Ted, Rocco, I was trying to, you know, get that interview started with him. And it was a little uncomfortable because I was trying to get information out of him. And he didn't seem like he lit up when his tag team partner sat down. That's when the chemistry started. It started a little awkwardly.
You could hear it. You could hear it almost shift too. Cause he starts, you're just saying, okay, well, we're waiting on him. Why don't you tell me this? And he's kind of like, we're doing things. And as soon as he walked in, it was like, oh
yeah. Then the lights went on.
Yeah.
That great chemistry. Wonderful chemistry.
I like how we can't even steal credit cards no more because no one's paying their bills.
I know. Yeah, the phone cards that we got last night don't work.
The jerk. The Dave Meltzer giving them 4.5 stars every match.
Yeah.
Do you think that's true?
I don't know if Dave gave more than 4 stars back then. Not very often. So that's why maybe he said 4.5.
Well, maybe. I don't know. I don't really follow his ratings or know how to where to find him, because I think you got to go through his site. But it made me wonder, because I actually wouldn't be shocked if he was giving ECW a ton of high
he was
marks, you know.
Yeah, back then Meltzer was certainly giving them, and Dave wasn't at the shows. I don't know how many times he was at ECW Arena. He was there, but he'd rely on reports from people who were there.
Yeah,
and I probably phoned a few in to him as well.
Did you used to give him ratings, what you thought it should be?
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, you'd be like, hey, that felt more like a 3, felt like
yeah.
a 4. Like,
yeah, yeah.
That's cool. Did he break down to you what he, how he created, or not created, he didn't create it, but how he typically broke down the thing so you might have a similar...
No.
No. I love that. Because then it's like, you're like, hey, I think it was 4 stars. And he goes, okay. No question about, like, did this happen? Did, yeah. How was the crowd? It was just like, it was this.
There was not a lot of interrogation. You know?
Yeah. That's good. Yeah. I was just wondering. Because if I remember correctly, the Hogan Rock match was a 3-star match.
Mm-hmm.
So I just hope that it's true that Paul or the Public Enemy was getting a bunch of 4.5. So I just want that to be true.
Yeah, well, we'll have to go back into the archives if anyone subscribes to The Observer and look at some of those ratings from back then.
Yeah, let us know in the comments what their biggest star rating
was. Yeah.
They do go on more and more here. So this was hard to edit because sometimes I'd be like, all right, they're on a tear right here. And I would start it and end it and realize this was like 11 minutes.
Yeah.
Just without a break, without.
I know. A lot of energy.
A lot of energy. They were definitely taking advantage of the time. I have a question for you because sometimes I feel like they've been doing it for a few years, but I hear wrestling promos on the indie scene sometimes. Sometimes I feel like people believe as long as they can keep talking without stumbling, therefore it makes a good promo. And I feel like guys like this might confuse them. Because here's an 8.5-minute promo about how they're going to beat up Sabu.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't a bad promo, but I wouldn't have put it on TV either. Like, right, you know what I mean?
Wrong one. But see, the thing that I didn't have luxury of, obviously, because they were guided by Paul E. When they were cutting those promos with Paul E, when Paul E took them outside, and Paul E knew how to produce them.
Yeah.
Or I'm just trying to keep the radio show going, and, you know, you don't stop someone mid-sentence or say that's a little bit too long or whatever. All I know is that we never had time for Meltzer this show.
Well, you couldn't get Meltzer at a certain point, too. There was a while where his line was busy. There was one part where the line's busy and Public Enemy goes, he's probably talking to Paul.
Yeah, I might have fibbed, you know, I might have fibbed and just said, this is too much, we're on too much of a roll with these guys, and, you know, Meltzer would bring it down a little bit, mm-hmm. so I let them go. And I think, you know, knowing that they were in character as much as they were, it wouldn't have been a good dynamic to have them on in character and then have Meltzer on, who's, you know, Mr. Serious.
He is, and from what we've heard historically on your show, one of my favorite parts is when he really starts fanning out and he doesn't want people to know, but he'll hear somebody say something in kayfabe and he begins to giggle.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that's why he loved.
One of the best memories I have was when we kept him on hold at WEVD when Paul E was in the studio. Mm. And he just wanted to listen.
Are you still there?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah. So, yeah, I can only imagine if he went on there in full character, he might just be laughing the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not a bad thing.
Not a bad thing.
One of my favorite things about him is when he starts giggling just because.
Yeah. Did someone like his character?
Yeah. You do get a caller on the line, Paul from Philadelphia.
Ah.
And this is where they start talking a bit about the you guys had mentioned previously where Sabu came out and cut a really, like, they interfered in their match because they were using tables.
Mm-hmm. Didn't like that, right?
Yeah, and that created a big stir. So here it is.
Well, the next big show coming up is December 17th against Sabu and Tasmaniac. There's a fan on the line from Philadelphia who's been calling in each and every week, and now he has an opportunity to speak to the Public Enemy. So, Mark, why don't we put Paul from Philadelphia on the air with us? Paul, are you there? Paul, are you there?
Yeah, how you doing, John?
Good.
How's everything?
Everything's okay. I'm sure you've been listening in, and I don't know if you wanted to speak to Public Enemy or not.
Are those guys great or what?
Hey, I've seen them in action, and I have to say that they're pretty spectacular once they're out there.
Yes, they are.
They're pretty spectacular here in the studios today as well.
Let me just ask Paul one question. Can I ask Paul one question?
Go ahead. You're co-hosting right now, so take
Paul,
the show over.
You're in Philadelphia, right?
Yes, sir.
Born and bred.
That's right.
Raised there ever since you was a wee baby, right?
Yeah.
Little homeboy, right? Little homeboy. Now, you've been down at ECW Arena. Was you there for the last show?
Yes, I was.
Was you there for the show before that?
Yes, I was.
Now, did Sabu come out and start the feud with the Public Enemy, or was it Public Enemy's fault that the feud started?
You can look at it two ways.
Well, you tell me how. Because all I know is I'm ready to dive off that top balcony on top of Mikey Whipwreck, and who come and interfere in my match, Johnny? Who? Tell me who.
Sabu.
Now, what business does that goofball Arab got coming out there bothering me when I'm trying to wrestle a world title match? You tell me, Paul.
Well, he really has no right to come in there during the match, but, you know, breaking the tables is basically Sabu's...
So Hulk Hogan drops a leg. Nobody else can use that move because Hulk Hogan drops a leg.
And Stinger does that thing in the corner. And whatever that is, nobody else can do that either.
That's
so what you say? Everybody's limited to one move.
And I'll be honest with you, Johnny. Tell him, Paul, when I break a table, I never miss. I'm dead on the money.
Every time.
And I'm pretty, too. Am I not the prettiest fly you ever saw? I'm always dead on the money. I just nail them son of a guns right through the table into the ground.
Two tables.
What's the difference? And Sabu, when he does it, John and Rizzi, he be smashing his shoulders, his knees, his toes, his head.
He looked like one of Jerry's kids coming off the top all spastic.
That's right. He don't have no athletic ability. No. And let me tell you something else, Paul, and you say, well, you can look at it two ways. Oh, you Public Enemy, your homeboys, you breaking tables, that's him. Well, too bad. Then he come out and interfere in our match, and we whip his butt and spike him into the mat. Now, he deserves that. He got no business out there. When I'm working, this is my job. You don't come on my job and tell me that you're going to take over.
You're right.
So, everybody's over there cheering. Sabu, 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 Sabu. Sabu my butt. Sabu gonna get his butt kicked next show.
Hey, Paul, did you ever see Sabu take a beating like he took it from the last time the Public Enemy got our hands on? Did we or did we not lay Sabu on the table and leave him laying in that broken table inside all that mess and walked away with our hands in the air? And our tag team championship belts high above the ECW.
And I want all you radio fans out there to listen to Paul carefully, because he's going to tell you if we're telling the truth or not. Now, go ahead, Paul. You better tell these people the right thing, boy.
Well, you guys are the Mac Daddies of violence. The ECW kingpins.
You're absolutely right. We are the Mac Daddies of baby.
That's exactly right.
Okay, listen, we got to take a break. Paul, I want to appreciate your call, speaking of Public Enemy here.
I have a question for them, John.
Okay, why don't we do this? I'm going to put you on hold, okay? And then we'll get back to you in just a second.
He didn't want to leave.
He had a question and never got to ask it.
No.
We come back and you do let him come back. But the idea that this is one of the reasons it was hard to edit for them, because... Hey, we got a caller in the line. Can I ask the caller a question instead? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then here he goes for like 5 minutes on it.
They took over, and I was okay with it. You know, there's nothing I can do. They're there.
Here was what I felt like, too, with the big difference between the Power Twins and these guys. Oh, there's a lot.
A lot.
But when they took over the show, they like had your back, dude.
Yeah.
There was somebody somewhere where they were saying something about your weight. And they were like, what are you talking about? Like they called you Big D and stuff. Like they were on your side.
Yeah. Look at it this way. If they didn't go on that tour, if they didn't meet Paul E on that tour, there would be no Public Enemy. So they had a debt of gratitude for me hiring them, bringing them there, Paul E seeing them, Paul E having the mad scientist genius that he is. The concept, the idea, put it together, and these guys lived off of that for the rest of their careers.
Absolutely.
If anyone's going to fuck with my weight, they had my back.
Yeah,
not like the twins who would just do nothing but insult me because of the weight, and exactly. Do to this day.
this very day.
Big pork barbecue.
Big pork barbecue. Man, he was 39 when he died.
Yeah, youngster.
Johnny Grinch. Yeah. How did they die?
Both. Heart attack for Ted.
Grunge was sleep apnea complications.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, but they were all, you know, somas and painkillers and all of that stuff that they did. Ted, I don't know. Ted was more of the controlled one. Johnny was just crazy.
Yeah.
Heavy into drugs. Heavy into drugs.
And then according to this, with Johnny, a lot of they felt like the sleep apnea caused a coronary due to obesity, just his
absolutely.
Weight.
Absolutely. I mean, sleep apnea is a killer.
Yeah.
I mean, I have it. I have apnea. I'm on a CPAP machine, and I have been now for, I guess, 3.5-4 years. I used to choke in my sleep from sleep apnea. I mean, reflux. I mean, it would just choke me, and I couldn't breathe. And I thought a few nights, I thought I was going to die. Yeah. And went for a sleep test. I was I stopped breathing 95 times an hour based on my sleep study.
That's insane.
Yeah, that's death. And so it is. For him being,
I'm glad you're honest.
For him being, you know, with sleep apnea and being obese, because he did have a ton of weight on him over the years. He kept packing more and more pounds. And when you combine that with alcohol and the drugs, that's a killer.
Yeah. Yeah, and like you said, Ted died of a heart attack on his way to a wrestling show. He was going to go fight for a heavyweight title at a Propane Wrestling. Yeah. And it's just crazy. It's just as we were talking about it, and you said it's crazy that they're no longer with us. I was like, it is. And I started thinking about it more and more. I was like, they weren't that old, right? Like
they were not. No. Young men. Yeah.
Man, what a shame. Let's see. You do get back from break, and you bring Paul back on to finish his question. And I just like the way that they talked about this.
Okay.
Wrestling fan! This is the original Doink! Oh yeah, the original Doink! You know! The phone lines are open at 955-1240. Oh, 955-1240! Get it? The Pro Wrestling Spotlight and John Arizio waiting for your call!
Okay, we're back for the second hour of the program here at WGBB. And, of course, first hour talked about the tragic loss of Art Barr, the Love Machine. And lightening things up here a little bit, Public Enemy, probably the most dangerous tag team out there in wrestling right now. Been together. You guys have really skyrocketed since you've been together, right? Right to the top is one of the top tag teams in the business today.
I don't want to say it, but you said it. We didn't.
I tell you now, ECW has really made their mark in Philadelphia. Sports Channel America there has been airing the program, and now ECW Arena has they turn away people at the door for all the house shows. The next step is New York. Understand that there's a big meeting
don't forget Florida. We heavy in Florida now. We heavy duty in Florida.
We be the bee's knees in Florida, baby.
The Mac Daddies of violence in Florida too.
How'd you guys go over down there? Is it your first tour of Florida?
Well, it was one heck of a match. They done put my head through a plate glass window. How that happened, Johnny Rizzi, I don't know, but it don't stop because Johnny Grunge at my back. He was right on top of that man, busting him up inside his head, and the people loved us down in Florida.
Had a good time down there.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, had a beautiful time.
We can't be going to Florida too much, Johnny, because then we're going to be back in the penitentiary.
You didn't get locked up down there, though, right?
Oh, of course. Don't talk about that, John. Is he not on the air, please?
Well, Paul has been holding on for Philly. He certainly wanted to ask you a question. Let's get Paul back on the line. We'll take some other calls for you here at Pro Wrestling Spotlight. Paul, are you there?
Yeah, John.
Good. You were saying before the break.
Yeah, I just want to say one thing before I ask Flyboy and Johnny my question. I just want to say that those two guys have the three most important traits of a great tag team. They're great wrestlers, great brawlers, and they get some of the best interviews on TV that I've ever seen. I mean, they're definitely the all-around great tag team.
Well, I could tell Paul is a very intelligent man, and I tell you, he's probably a Rhodes Scholar.
And also, all your interviews are shot in hoodie vision, too.
Well, they got us to be, boy.
Yeah, you got your hoodies, your hoodies.
You know, John?
Yeah.
I don't care what anybody else says. Public Enemy are definitely the 1994 Tag Team of the Year.
That could very well be. Could very well be.
Without a doubt. But my question to Flyboy and Johnny is this. Since arriving in ECW 14 months ago, they faced some of the greatest tag teams of all time. Like you mentioned before, Tanaka and Diamond, Sullivan, Tasmaniac, the Bruise Brothers, the Funks, Bad Breed, the Pitbulls, and most recently Cactus Jack and that punk kid, Mikey Whipwreck. But my question is, who was your toughest opponent and why, out of all those tag teams?
Well, I guess you'd have to put them all together to say the toughest opponent, because it wasn't just two of them that was toughest. All of them was have to be the toughest.
Right. You got to understand something, Paul. When men are going for a world title to put that gold around their waist, me and Johnny, we never knew. We never knew what that really meant the first time around. We won them belts and we was high-stepping and spending all our money and going crazy. And we never realized once we lost them belts, what a change, a drastic change in our life that it would make. Right. And now, not saying that me and Johnny ain't smart now, because we educated, baby.
Smart. So, real smart.
And now I realize how important that title means. And brother, it could bring in them greenbacks, huh, Johnny?
Cash rules everything around us. Dollar bill, y'all.
All right, listen, Paul, we got to run.
Okay, you guys truly live up to your motto, Public Enemy. Naughty by nature,
violent by design.
Peace. I'm out of here.
Rockabye, baby.
Bye-bye.
Peace. I'm out of here. Like he felt like he did it on that one.
Yeah, he was happy. Paul left the airways content and happy. I mean, he couldn't even pick the show up in Philly. I don't believe it did go down to Atlantic City. He might have been able to pick it up. But he'd call in and just to listen in.
Yeah, right. Like when you guys were talking about it, he would just, because you did that for a few people. They'd call in and just ask to be put on hold.
Right. We had enough phone lines that we're able to do that for some of them.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. I was just pulling up some pictures of Public Enemy, and you think about it too. By the time they made it to WCW and even WWF, they came in as a unit.
Yes.
It was never one of them and then the other one showing up later. It was, We want Public Enemy, or we, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. But WWF, like you said, screwed them up with the outfits, and you know they just PG'd them.
They were already doing that in WCW, but yeah, they really cartooned it up a little bit more because on Nitro they were there. Or did they go to WCW after WWF?
I don't remember, man.
They had like one match in WWF.
Is that it? There was in and out pretty quick.
It was pretty quick because they went out there and they was against Bradshaw and Ron Simmons. And there was some sort of like, yeah, we don't want to do the finish you want to do or whatever. And then Bradshaw said something like, all right, yeah, we'll just do whatever you guys want. You just call it in the ring. And when they went out there, they just beat the shit out of them. Like,
they were a little stiff.
No, it was like beyond a little stiff. It's one of the more notable ones. People be like, oh, when things go wrong in the ring, they always bring that up. Like,
oh, do they? They got the shit kicked out of them? Is that what you're saying?
Yep. Yep. But
my memory doesn't retain everything. Yeah. I am an old man, you know.
But at the same time, it's like you said, if it wasn't for your trip that you brought them both on for other reasons, their whole career would have been entirely different because, what brought them into the other places was together.
And they were always marginal local guys that, you know, that without each other, they wouldn't have achieved what they achieved. Ted was always a great worker. I mean, he was always like, everyone wanted to work with Ted and bring him on the shows because he was a really good worker. Johnny was just a goofball heel, but was a good brawler. But it was, what made them was their tag team.
Yeah. It's really cool. You talk about how good their interviews have been on ECW TV. You talk about the On the Bridge segment specifically mm-hmm. that you were really impressed with, and about how they're going to be breaking into the New York Martin. And it was the whole, they ain't ready. New York ain't ready. They do have a caller call in. I don't have this clip because I pulled a different one. But this first guy starts talking about, you know, what do you think about Sabu and Taz as a tag team? And so they go on this long promo about being two singles guys and none of that. And then he asked, who was tougher, Dory Funk or Buddy Dunn?
Oh, the Buddy Dunn shit starts.
It starts immediately. And then Johnny goes, who's Buddy Dunn? And the guy says, well, I heard when you first got into the business, Buddy Dunn gave you a serious ass kicking. And Johnny was like, I don't know who that is. Like, it was this whole thing, right? Then you go to an ad break because the guy said ass kicking and you probably were a little nervous. So you go straight to ad whenever you get frustrated.
Mm-hmm. I do. Or did.
During the ad break, there was a funny bit where you mentioned Missy Hyatt's going to be at this event. And they say, Missy, you got to quit calling us. We aren't interested. And then there was something he said here, though, in the thing was he said that he really liked one of the girls who was on your bus trip, thought she was very hot or whatnot. Did the Public Enemy ever end up on your bus trip, or just from when you guys were in the front couple rows or whatever?
I'm trying to think if my sister went on one of them ECW bus trips with a couple of her friends, like Bruce Jacobs, who was the producer back then, yeah, and his sister Erica. They might have gone to an ECW show.
Yeah.
Which I don't, you know, I'm trying to remember specifically, but maybe that's who they were referring to, because I didn't get a lot of girls on that bus trip.
That was my figure, was that I was like, well, if there was random girls on the bus trip, John would probably remember.
Yeah, I didn't get any from what I recall.
Yeah.
I mean, I wish that girl Kelly would have come on, the one that, you know, one. For some reason I'm fascinated by her 30 years later.
Yeah, what could have been.
Yeah.
I also wonder if maybe they're just putting over your bus, because they later on, and we have a clip of it, he tries to tell somebody to get on the bus trip, go to see the shows, get on John's bus trip. So I think they're putting over your stuff too, by even saying like, oh, you got hot girls on your bus. Like, yeah, well, guys should go on.
They met my sister too. And my sister is, you know, is still beautiful to this day, but you know, 30 years ago, I mean, she was a head turner big time.
Yeah.
And they met her personally at, you know, my house, you know, where I was renting when we had the barbecue. And yeah, so they might have, and she might have been on a bus trip with Bruce and Erica. That's the only thing I could think of. But my brain is foggy about those events from 30 years ago.
And with how much they liked you, it feels like they were more likely to just mention one of the girls as opposed to strictly saying your sister.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Respect.
Where other guys didn't have that.
No.
Let's see. You asked them something about 911, and they said he's a monster, which I think is funny because we've learned so much about 911. And wasn't he the one who was up against mass transit? You know, they killed that kid.
Oh.
Yeah. They say Paulie's favorite football teams are the Oilers and the Packers, which got a big rise out of you. And then you asked them specifically about the Philippine trip.
Okay.
You guys have done some overseas travel as well, right?
John, yeah. I counted how many times I've been around this world, I'd be dizzy.
Well, I recall one situation, which I definitely bring up, in the Philippine Islands. You guys were pretty wild over there.
Well, we met the right people, let's say.
The right people. I was fortunate enough to have you guys on tour, and lo and behold, Johnny Grunge gets his picture in the front page of the Philippine paper because he crashed a party, which was given for Imelda Marcos. Now, Johnny, why don't you tell the audience how that happened?
Hey, baby, it's just like this. Free booze. It was champagne fountain.
Free food, Johnny.
Free food. We were hungry. We were thirsty. Hey, and they had some good-looking babes. I mean, hot mamas. Hot chocolate thunder daddy mamas.
Yeah, and Johnny, I can't believe you walked in there dressed the way you was with all them people in tuxedos and evening gowns. But when they spotted Johnny Grunge, they rolled out the red carpet, right, Johnny?
Rolled down, brought me right down to Miss Imelda Marcos.
What kind of shoes she have on?
You know, the kind with the flowers growing out the tops of them.
You don't think
that
she stole them to you, Johnny?
But she didn't steal them, but I got them.
You are officially the Goodwill Ambassador over there now in the Philippine Islands. Your next return trip, they just may put him as king.
You never know. He going to be king of the homies.
They definitely got a lot of homeless homies.
I know a few houses that definitely consider him the king over there.
Yes, indeed. Well, I tell you guys, no matter where you go, where you travel, what you do.
And speaking of the Philippines, we like to make a shout out to our taxi cab driver who stayed with us 24 hours a day, Brando. Hello, Brando.
Peace, Brando.
They're picking it up on shortwave over there. We're going to go back to the phones now. We'll go to Smithtown and speak to Buddy. Buddy from Smithtown, you're next.
Hi, am I on the air?
Yes, you are.
Yeah, I got a question for Public Enemy. I like you guys a lot. You know, you're like one of my favorite tag teams and all. And you guys are gonna beat Sabu and Tasmaniac, right?
Definitely.
But I have a question. You guys say you're gonna beat them, and I believe you and everything. But you guys couldn't even beat Matt and Nick Pacone.
Who is Matt and Nick Pacone?
You don't remember fighting them?
No. Nope.
It was back in like '90.
'90.
Yeah,
Public Enemy wasn't a tag team in '90.
We were locked up in '90. We were San Quentin, homeboy.
Unless we wrestled in San Quentin.
Well, I remember seeing you guys fight Matt and Nick Pacone for the tag team championship.
For what tag team championship?
I don't remember. I was younger then.
He was a lot younger. He was a lot stupider than
What about Buddy Dunn? You remember him?
No, Buddy. Who keeps talking about Buddy Dunn? Who's Buddy Dunn?
He fought Johnny Grunge.
Huh?
He fought you, Johnny.
Buddy Dunn?
Yeah.
Is he any kidding the mic, cunt?
All right, we're going to take another call here. Let's get a little out of control. 955-1240. Buddy Dunn. Never heard of him. These guys are cracking up back here.
Yeah, there you go. That's an old trick.
No. But yeah, this whole Matt and Nick Pacone, this whole Buddy Dunn, that wasn't the last we hear about Buddy Dunn either. More people call in about it.
It was an ongoing thing. I guess everyone picked up on it and they decided to mention Buddy Dunn in almost every call after that.
I think there were three people in one house who called in about it. And I do think there was like two people who made a joke about it. It was like, well, as long as I got one more question, you know, what would you do to Buddy Dunn if you got the chance? You know what I mean? Like, but it was interesting too, because they're like, oh, we saw you back in 90. And like, we weren't a tag team in 90.
Yeah. We were in prison.
Yeah. I mean, we were in prison was funny.
But I'm surprised that they didn't get locked up. At least Johnny didn't get locked up for crashing Marcos's party and all the ladies of the evening. All the ladies of the evening that were guests at the Manila Hotel of one Mike Dorham. And I'll tell you something. I mean, I don't think I've ever disclosed this before. I don't think you know about this. I don't think I've ever talked about it publicly. But when we're in the Manila Hotel, there was a knock on my door in the wee hours of the morning. And I opened the door, and there were two ladies of the evening there. Gorgeous ladies. And so I was like, who are you looking for? Looking for John. They were looking for Mike Dorham.
Yeah.
And they knocked on the wrong door. And needless to say, that Mike Dorham, aka Johnny Grunge, did not see those girls that night.
you got the right place. What can I say?
The first thing they did was they took baths.
Yeah.
Because it was an elegant hotel, and you know, so it was. I remember that night. That was crazy night.
She seems like a whole, I mean, everything out there seemed nuts. Like the idea that he was able to just walk into that thing. I like how you asked him, how do you get in there? And he goes, there were free drinks and food.
Right. There was a champagne fountain.
Yeah.
And I was like, how the hell did you do that?
Yeah. And it really sounds like no one stopped him from doing it is how he did it.
And what was ironic was that Marcos's grandkids or kids or whatever, they wound up going to IWAS shows there.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I don't think she went, and we would have known about it if she was there, queen or whatever, the dictator of that island. But yeah, that was a crazy couple weeks, man.
What a time!
A lot of debauchery.
It's just so cool. It's just insane. Let's see. You have a kid call in right after that, who asks who the fake Undertaker is, and they have a lot of fun with him.
Yes, I remember that call. Yeah,
it was funny too because the kid, like, hi John, this is Mike from this is Mike from Brooklyn, like, and you're like, and you even say, you go, this is gonna be good, because this kid was like trying to, this is what I'm doing, this is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. And don't forget, you could hear the whole damn thing on our Patreon account. This is a 2 hour show that's worthy of your $5.
I listened to this entire show twice while doing the notes.
Oh, did you?
I don't always re-listen to all of it, but this was one where I was like, I'm just going to listen to it again.
Yeah.
It was pretty fun. It's crazy to me too that Public Enemy weren't more successful. Like, they were fine, and I remember them as a kid, and I remember liking them, and they would do the hand wave because they had the table in the other arm. I remember we really liked them, me and my buddy, but when I think about, like, the peak of their career, probably was ECW.
It was, without a doubt. Because by that time, you know, the demons, as we talk about on this show today, and they were, you know, not as much Ted, but Johnny for sure. I mean, he was out of control.
Yeah.
That's why, you know, the careers don't last long. And that's why, you know, each stop that you go and you're not the same person as when it was fresh and exciting and you were really doing the things that you did at ECW. So it's unfortunate, but that was the nature of the wrestling business back then for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's why we start seeing more and more now, because social media is a thing where some of these guys and girls who've been in the business for a long time start saying, you know what, take the pictures that they regret not having taken more pictures with the people they knew, because, you know, I mean, was it Mickie James mentioned it when she realized everyone was posting their pictures with Scott Hall that she didn't have one?
Yeah.
You know, like, I have a single one. Like, it's crazy. So it's why I feel bad about it sometimes, trying to, you know, might come off a little bit like a market things, but at the same time, sometimes I said it to I met Pretty Deadly WrestleMania weekend, or not WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. Yeah. WrestleMania weekend last year, we were at the same bar to see a magic show, and I walked over to them and we were just talking normally. And then before I kind of let them have their night, I was like, you know what? I don't mean to be a big mark, but I may never be in the same room as you again my whole life. And I was like, do you think we just take a quick selfie? And they looked at each other and said, that's a good point. You never know.
You never know.
And then they were like happy to do the picture. And I was like, you hear about the Public Enemy dying at 39 and you go, man, you never know. Yeah. But yeah, they should have been bigger, I think. Let's see. John asked if Macho Man's still going to go to WCW. Oh, during your ad break, there was a commercial for Father of the Bride making its television debut.
You know, that's another point to bring up, too. The commercials and the PSAs that lead into the show. Because there were several, condom... You know, advocating condom use.
Yes, a ton of condom ones. Yeah,
yeah. So that, of course, when I upload these shows, I always make sure to keep all the commercials in the beginning for the patrons, obviously, because I know, you know, we have no use for them here, but they're fascinating to listen to. These commercial breaks are fascinating to listen to, just because of, you know, these are things from 30 years ago, and sometimes you listen to them and you say, wow.
Yeah. Some of yours had news breaks in the middle. The ad was a news break.
Yeah. Well, we always had the AP network news at the top of the hour. So that's why we had to take a break at the top of the hour for the news. And the news that was going on was crazy back then as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the more interesting things is when I hear stuff like when I heard Ronald Reagan's voice on one of yours, I was like, what?
Yeah.
It's crazy. Reba McEntire doing an award show telling people to do stuff. I was like, this is crazy.
And Clinton was president.
Yeah. Let's see. We do get back to the callers. You get Jessica from Bohemia and then Rob from Medford right after.
All right, we're back here with Public Enemy, their first appearance here at Pro Wrestling Spotlight, and it's been a wild appearance for them. They're just sitting here just waiting for the next
call. We're in the house with the big hoopty, the heavy D professional wrestling. Ain't got nothing but love for you, baby. John Rizzi, the man, most knowledgeable man in pro wrestling today, I'd say. Wouldn't you, John?
Exactly, Rocco.
Thanks for the compliments. 955-1240. Let's go to Bohemia and speak to Jessica. Jessica, you're next. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, you're next, Jessica. You're on the air.
I have a question for Public Enemy.
Go right ahead.
How would you defend yourself in a no-lat attack by the table-breaking pile drivers by Buddy Dunn?
Who's this Buddy Dunn? How would you defend yourself? Did you hear the question?
Who is Buddy Dunn?
These people be dissing us, John. What? I don't like it. I'm going to get in there, and then I'm going to start swinging in a minute. Buddy Dunn.
Hey, fly girl Jessica. Where's this Buddy Dunn from?
Texas, I think.
Texas?
I think Jessica used to go out with Buddy Dunn, if I'm not mistaken, Johnny.
You think maybe he done her buddy or what?
I tell you, he got a big old bubble butt. I know that.
955-1240. Jessica, thanks for your call here to program. 955-1240.
Hey, don't get rid of the fly girl so quick. Hey, wait, Jessica.
Get some information on this baby.
She's gone.
She's gone. Let's go to Medford and speak to Rob. Rob, you're next. Rob, are you there?
Yes, John. How's it going?
I'm hanging in.
I just wanted to let you know, I was at the Garden last night, and there was a huge pop for when Diesel won that belt last night. But it's a shame because Bob Backlund got some of the most heated and... the crowd noise was incredible for him, like booing and everything. It was a shame to take the title off him that quickly.
I thought Bob was going to hang on to the title for a while.
But I think Diesel's going to be a really popular champion.
I think so. I think he's going to get the Monster Hulk Hogan type push.
And I have one question for Public Enemy. Have you and would you, if has WWF and WCW ever contacted you, and would you ever think about going to them?
Good question. WWF or WCW, and have they ever contacted the Public Enemy up to this point?
Both has, homeboy, but you know what? We're not cartoon characters. We're the real deal.
Well, that's what I was hoping, that you'd stay in ECW because that's where you belong, because that other stuff is cartoon
ECW is the only place that we're capable and allowed to do what we do best. We're brawlers, fighters, and wrestlers. So we can't be breaking up tables and chairs and busting people up with baseball bats and barbed wire and no WWF. Nope, Johnny, ain't gonna see that.
I think they both even got a violence clause. No violence? No violence? What is professional wrestling without violence? Huh? You know what I think? I think them boys sit back there and talk to each other and tell each other what they're going to do.
All right. Anything else, Rob?
No, thanks for your time, John.
Thank you for your call.
No violence.
No violence. A no violence clause.
I think those boys talk to each other and tell each other what to do.
Yeah.
It's really great listening to this. I'm really digging it. I love it, man.
Yeah, one guy calls in and straight up asks them what do they think about Harlem Heat.
Ooh,
you know they didn't seem to have an issue with them. They said they could be strong contenders. He goes, we have an open door policy. We would face them like they know who we are.
Yeah,
like and this was right when they were starting everything with Sherry. So I think
I mean, they were hot for a while too. My goodness, they were a great tag team.
Someone, Pete, also calls in and asks what's going to happen to the WWF tag division in general. And they chime in with, like, they need some tag teams. They don't have much for tag teams. Mm-hmm. And then at one point they just say, we're not talking enough about Taz. And you guys start going on about how cool Taz is and how he's a suplex machine and all this stuff. Like, it was cool to hear, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, and then Terry from Sable asked the greatest match they'd ever had, and they said the Funk Brothers in the barbed wire match. You know, because they got the
they had so many good matches, and the, you know, the Funk Brothers, my goodness,
yeah, yeah, and then to beat them at all, and then yeah. in the match that they had coined as their own, the barbed wire match was really cool. And then that guy also asked, "Well, what would you do in a barbed wire match against Buddy Dunn?" But yeah, you do ask them a little bit about Art Barr, and they do talk a little bit about him. They saw him, and that they thought he was going to come in and have a match with them. The last caller of the night was actually the Looney Tunes again.
Yay!
And you cut that right away. And before I play the last clip, you did mention in your outro about how excited you were about ECW and about how much you like Stephanie, and you are, I think, the first person I've heard say historically in the further we go back that it's just like different flavors of ice cream. You say that's why we have vanilla and strawberry and chocolate. You know, it's all ice cream, mm-hmm. which is what we hear a lot nowadays. Everyone says that.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember hearing that first? Or do you remember just thinking it? Or
I just thinking it. Yeah.
Yeah. Because that becomes a huge thing. And I think that Dave took it from you.
That son of a bitch.
Let's get him on and choke him out.
No, I use that quite often, you know, to this day and years ago. Yeah, it's because when you have differences, it's like, that's why, you know, people like different flavors of ice cream, man.
Yeah. You go to the ice cream shop because it has different flavors. You know,
or you could be like me back in my heyday. I'd eat all the ice cream no matter what the flavor was.
Yeah. You'd say, I'd like a 32 scoop, please.
Yes, please. Fill it up. Man, I'm gallons. You know, one of them big tubs where you used to go to Baskin Robbins and get those little sample tastes of that ice cream. Let me get a little Rocky Road. Let me get a little caramel swirl. And I'd go into the ice cream store and I'd say, I'd look for the bucket that was most empty. Mm-hmm. And I'd say, all right, now put scoops of all the different ice creams in that one bucket and put a lid on it. I'm taking it home.
Yeah.
And the next day I'd weigh myself and 7 pounds.
Did you do that? Did you get the test? Big,
no, no, of course not. It'd
be amazing if they would actually let you.
It's a good idea, actually, right?
Yeah,
kind of a good idea. I like that.
It's not a bad idea. And I just was wondering what they were going to charge you for it, because I was like,
imagine. I don't know. Yeah, I was fucking just almost 400 pounds back then. No wonder why those ECW fans would chant, you fat fuck, to me.
Well, and then that one lady coined you for barbecue.
Well, yeah, Tess.
Which makes, like, the story in and of itself to me is, like, so bizarre because it seemingly came out of nowhere. It's not like you took her to a barbecue place or anything.
No,
like that.
She just called and phrased it. She's like, you're like my big pork barbecue.
Yeah. And it's just not like, why would you say that?
Unfortunately, Sunny Beach and the Power Twins have never let me live it down.
Yeah. Because it was also out of nowhere. If there was context to it that made sense and she didn't just say it
right
without context and there wasn't context to fill in, like, that's what makes it even better. It's just like,
the better context when I got that call was, hello, John, this is Tess. I'm in a jail. You come with me? I was like, who?
Gonna come get me.
I'm on my way to Cebu City, sweetie. I'm out of this town. And we had our own private island there, Cebu City. And more because the debauchery that took place there.
Should have rescued her because you owed her one, because she gave you the greatest nickname of your life.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I love that nickname. It's better than what they called me in college.
Yeah.
I told you about that, right?
Wasn't it in your book?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jit. I got that from Paul the Pervert Rose, basically. I've explained it before. We digress.
It's in the book. Check it out on Amazon.
Yeah, Matt Memories. The book is still available, everybody. Why don't you go to Amazon.com and you can get it there. The audio book as well. It's fascinating. I know you and Michelle loved the audiobook.
Yep. Yep, we loved it. We listened to the audiobook on the way to San Diego and back, and anytime she started to doze or anything, I had to stop it because she didn't want to miss it. She loved it so much.
It's a fascinating tale, fascinating memoir. But if you'd like an autographed copy, send me an email, john@mattmemories.com.
Yep, worth it. This is the last clip. Comes in from the ad break with Paul, and then you know, a little bit of back and forth ensues.
Mm-hmm.
This is Paul E. Dangerously, manager of 911 and the most homicidal, suicidal, genocidal, death-defying athlete on the face of the planet, Sabu. And you, fortunately, are listening to the Pro Wrestling Spotlight with John Ortamy, two fat, ugly teachers of Resi on 1240 WGBB. No, I never listen to the station. Yes, I do when John's on the air. For the latest wrestling news and views, there's only one place to get it all. And that's the Tracy Lords 900 Hotline. Or just listen to the show right now.
Paul E. Dangerously with a promo here. And Public Enemy is sitting right across from me, and they're getting a little steamed.
Can we talk about that grab bag one more time? What do you mean grab bag? That's what we do best, grab bags.
Grab bags.
Another thing, I didn't like that comment Paul E. just made about you there, Heavy D, because you know what? I think we just going to throw a little extra dose of medicine in on your occasion for
Paul.
I'm going
to bust him upside his head one time for the big hoopty.
Hoopty hoop, shoopty shoop, shoopty shoop.
Because I tell you right now, we are the hot steppers, and we are the lyrical gangsters, and we are the unforbidden, and we're still living like that.
Word up.
I still want to know what's going on with this Buddy Dunn guy.
Buddy Dunn. I'm going to get his ass in the ring and kick his ass.
Nobody better call in about Buddy Dunn one more time.
Don't call in here and ask us about Buddy Dunn one more time. I don't want no calls on no Buddy Dunn.
Yeah, that Mark. No Buddy Dunn calls. Let's go to Rick from Jericho. Rick, you're on the air. Rick, are you there?
Yes. Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Hi, John.
How are you doing?
Good. Actually, I'm a new listener.
How long you been listening?
Just like a couple of weeks.
How'd you find out about the program?
I went to one of the Garden events, the wrestling events.
Yeah.
And I saw your, I guess it was the promo for your show.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, welcome aboard.
Thank you. I was just wondering if you know why the Ultimate Warrior didn't show up at Survivor Series?
Well, I know they're still talking to him. Negotiations are still forthcoming, and I guess they didn't come to an agreement up till Survivor Series. So,
John, I know why.
He's a difficult guy.
I know why.
We know why.
We know why, John.
He was probably
go right ahead.
He's probably laying on a shag carpet with a bottle of wine in front of a fireplace somewhere.
No, Johnny, I heard that they had a secret opponent for him to wrestle, and that's why he didn't show up.
Who was that?
Buddy Dunn.
Do you know whatever happened to the Steiner brothers?
Steiners are competing in Japan.
Uh-huh.
Their contract with the WWF is now expired.
Right.
They're free to work anywhere at this point. I think Rick is doing an independent shot down in Atlanta, Georgia.
Any chance of coming back in the WWF? I think the WWF needs them, surely.
I think WWF needs them, but I don't think they'll be going back to WWF. They're talking to WCW, and who knows? Maybe they'll even show up at ECW to take on the Public Enemy
sometime in the
near future.
Yeah, I don't know much about the ECW. I might just go see them one time.
Well, we're doing a bus trip every month to ECW Arena, and they're scheduled to shortly be on television in this area.
Yeah, and I have a last comment about the WCW.
Go right ahead.
Why is Hacksaw Jim Duggan a United States heavyweight champion?
Don't ask me.
Most prestigious title there.
That's what I want to know.
It's a mystery to me.
It's a mystery to thousands more out there listening to this program. That is certainly a travesty.
Hey, Hoopty, can I have one question to Ricky here,
baby?
Go ahead,
talk to Ricky.
Sure. Ricky.
Yeah.
Are you a true wrestling fan?
Absolutely. I've been watching.
You love wrestling?
Absolutely.
Do you love wrestling?
I love it.
Do you love entertaining wrestling?
Well, you got to admit, the WCW and WWF are the two premier organizations.
Wait, you sidestepped me. Do you like entertaining wrestling, or do you like wrestling?
I love wrestling, yeah.
Okay, then you better get on this bus ride, and you better come down to ECW Arena, and then when them other two chumps come on TV, you're going to turn the channel off.
I might just do that.
Yes, you better do it, because you're going to be shortchanging yourself if you don't get on that bus.
All right.
It's certainly like no other promotion out there in the States today. It's just you just got to cover yourself up. I think when you go to ECW Arena, there should be like a raincoat you should wear, because blood usually splatters on everyone in the first row.
But I've noticed, once I've been listening to your program, you don't talk much about the two organizations.
Well, the WWF and WCW. Yeah, I do report on news that's happening in their right. companies. And for me, I think the most exciting things that are happening right now in pro wrestling are ECW and the AAA IWC, right. the Mexican stuff that's coming in. Mm-hmm. I just think that for many, many years now, it's been a slowly stagnation, decline.
You
got to educate me. This business is stagnated in the two major groups, and there's right. really nothing exciting happening. So
this is how we take the old to the new, Johnny. This is how we take the old to the new. So get your ass on that bus too.
Thanks for your call, Rick from Jericho. I appreciate it. Please call back. Much. Please call back again.
Okay. Good way to end it.
Yeah.
I don't know what that dude was talking about when he said he learned about my show from the promo at Madison Square Garden. I don't know where that came from, first of all.
I was wondering if there was like a flyer that was put out or something.
Well, I would be tossed out very quickly if that would happen. I don't remember ever handing anything out at the Garden.
Really? Huh.
Yeah. So I don't know what he was talking about.
Not even and for like Weekend of Champ. Well, not the radio show, though.
Not yeah, the radio show. No. No.
Yeah. Huh.
Unless, I don't know. Who the hell knows? I mean, and, you know, he was just, he was trying to push a little buttons there with, you know, I don't cover the WWF or WCW, but I didn't, as everybody knows who listens to this show every week, I didn't find anything going on there exciting at all at that point, you know.
No, and even you talked about it. Someone else called in and said they thought it was one of the worst pay-per-views that WWF had ever done at the time, that there was just a big lull. It was not exciting.
Tons of stagnation between the two big groups. That's why it was so exciting to see the evolution of ECW and the AAA. And it was, but things turned, you know, things turned pretty, with less than 2 years. Look what happened.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But that's it. That's the show.
That's the show. It was a really big shoe. Wasn't
a really
it?
Big shoe.
Really well, cool. I mean, I really enjoyed this one. This was fun. I think everybody will love it. And you want to hear the whole damn thing unedited, just go to patreon.com/John Arezzi. You know, five shows left, Marsh. Only five for this.
Only five
round.
Left. I'm excited too to get to the Eddie Guerrero one because I can't wait to hear what you ask him. You know what I mean? There's so many things that you could have wanted to know in that time frame. So I'm excited.
Yeah. So
to know that's coming. See.
So we'll be putting it up there. We got Tommy Dreamer, Mikey Whipwreck. I wonder if they're in the studio. They may be actually in the studio. Missy Hyatt. So these are coming up. We have another Cactus Jack. We do a live remote from the Nassau Coliseum with Cactus and Missy. And then Paul E., Eddie Guerrero, Dave Meltzer. And then this final cassette, which is just the date, January 21st, 1995. And I don't know what's on it. We shall find out soon enough.
That's fantastic. So good. But yeah. Yeah, we'll get to it. And you know what I think I might do too, just because I realized one of the reasons I didn't play it was because it was so short, was the Taz clip. I might pull that and just use it as a little, just a clip we put up on just a short.
Okay, cool. You know? Yeah. Yeah. And if you're, you know, we did put up that short today, that little social media clip of Orton. I know that Randy's wife already liked it.
Very cool.
Well, she reposted it, but not very Randy, good. But Cowboy Bob's wife. I would love Randy to see it and retweet it. That would help our numbers.
That would be cool. It'd be cool if you got, I mean, just to know you got a kick out of it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just to know you got a kick out of it from way back then.
Yeah. Cause I don't think they realized. That's why I was a little bummed that I didn't see any interaction with Dewey when we found the clip of him.
I know.
Being interviewed. Cause it's like, man, that's just cool. You know,
it's a strange thing when you post videos and such. I don't know how things go viral or how it really always confuses me. I could put up a picture of myself and Freddie Blassie and it gets, you know, thousands and thousands of impressions, especially on Facebook. And and then I put up a video. I'm looking at the numbers from the clip from today. I'm like, well, how come no one's looking at this? Is it algorithms? Is it who the hell knows? Is it because I'm not a paid subscriber to, you know, to the premium service on Twitter X or whatever?
I don't know. I mean, it's the same with YouTube. I posted a couple of shorts for Medusa this week, and one of them got like 3,000 views on the first day, and the next one got like 17 and 2. And I was like,
I don't understand
the difference. Yeah. Anyway, but
that's it.
But we're here. We're doing it.
that'll wrap it up. Give us your plugs there, hoop-dee-doo and hi-o and all that other stuff and what you got going on. And yes, please tell us what's going on. What's going on with the show, the revamp show, back in action and all the new things that are going on with that. You guys are getting lit every week.
Yeah, it's been getting pretty good, pretty solid. We got we've been kind of rotating through people on there too, which has been really nice. So, but it's just me and my buddies, and we just drink and talk wrestling and talk about what we like, what we don't like, and why. Like, you know, being critical about it. It's not always sucks because I don't like it, or I don't like it because it sucks. It's all like, this is what's not connecting. So it's just a fun conversation, you know.
You can find this everywhere on every podcast platform.
Yeah, Wrestling on the Rocks. Outside of that, youtube.com/queenofcarnage for me and Medusa, and then youtube.com/prowrestlingspotlight for every time I'm hanging out with you.
Yeah, which we always have fun with. And thank you again, Marsh. We will see you next week.
Yep.
5 shows to go. We are taping a new Matt Memories from Madison Square Garden. We'll be taping that tomorrow. It'll be released sometime next week. It's from the January 15th. 1974 show when Bruno Sammartino defends his newly won Worldwide Wrestling Federation title, his first defense against Don Leo Jonathan. So that'll be a good one. Matt Memories from Madison Square Garden is available on all the podcast platforms as well. There is no YouTube version of it. I've been asked about that several times, and this week for some reason several people reached out to me about a YouTube version. There isn't any of that particular show. But anyway, if you'd like to follow me on Twitter or X, it's at John Arezzi. So that's the same for Twitter. I just said Twitter, but the same for Instagram and Threads. We have those groups on Facebook. And that is for Pro Wrestling Spotlight. And there are two Matt Memories pages. One's private and one is public. So you could find me virtually anywhere. And I do want to remind everybody once again, go to patreon.com/John Arezzi. Join the community. Listen to the archives. Get the shows early. Get them commercial free. I know you'll enjoy it. I want to thank our producer, our creative director, Marsh. I want to thank our Patreon executive producers, Anthony Pyrus and Joe Holloway, who join us on our next program. And, of course, to all the patrons, each and every one of you, for your support, helping with the production costs for the show. Until next week, when we relive more history with you, this is John Arezzi for the Pro Wrestling Spotlight.